back of an upright glass-fronted coffin booth released a tripwire. This made a last cog click within the machinery under the sign, Mademoiselle Tarot, the Dust Witch. The wax woman's figure within the glass box nodded her head and fixed the boys with her pointing nose as the boys passed, leading the men. Her cold wax hand brushed the dust of destiny on a ledge within the coffin. Her eyes did not see. They were sewn shut with laced black widow web, dark threads. A waxworks fright, good and proper she was, and the policeman beamed, viewing her, and strolled on, and beamed at Monsieur Guillotine for his act, too. And, moving, the police were relaxing now and seemed not to mind being called late on a jolly venture into a rehearsing world of acrobats and seedy magicians. Gentlemen! Mr. Dark and his mob of illustrations surged forward on the pine platform, a jungle beneath each arm, an Egyptian viper scrolled on each bicep. Welcome. You're just in time. We're rehearsing all our new acts. Mr. Dark waved, and strange monsters gaped their fangs from his chest. A cyclops with a navel for a squinted moron eye twitched on his stomach as he strode. Lord, thought Will, is he bringing that crowd with him, or is the crowd pulling him along by his skin? From all the creaked platforms, from the muffled sawdust, Will felt the freaks wheel and fix their eyes, enchanted, as were interns and police, by this illustrated throng of humanity that, in one agglomerative move, dominated and filled the immediate air and tense sky with silent shoutings for attention. Now, part of the wasp needle tattooed population spoke. It was Mr. Dark's mouth over and above this calligraphic explosion, this railroad accident of monsters in tumult upon his sweating skin. Mr. Dark chanted forth the organ tones from his chest. His personal electric blue-green populations trembled, even as the real freaks on the sawdust tent floor trembled, even as, hearing in their most secret marrow, Jim and Will trembled, and felt more freak than the freaks themselves. Gentlemen, boys, we've just perfected the new act. You'll be the first to see, cried Mr. Dark. The first policeman, his hand casually nestled to his pistol holster, squinted up at that vast corral of beasts and beings. This boy said, ha! The illustrated man barked a laugh. The freaks leaped in a frolic of shock, then calmed as the carnival owner continued with great ease, patting and soothing his own illustrations, which somehow patted and soothed the freaks. Said. But what did he see? Boys always scare themselves at sideshows, eh? Run like rabbits when the freaks pop out. But tonight, especially tonight... The policeman glanced beyond to the erector-set papier-mâché relic constricted in the electric chair. Who is he? Him? Will saw fire lick up through Mr. Dark's smoke-clouded eyes, saw him just as quickly snuff it out. The new act. Mr. Electrico.
No! Look at the old man! Look! Will yelled.
The police turned to appraise his demon cry.
Don't you see, said Will. He's dead. Only thing holds him up is the straps.
The interns gazed up at the great flake of winter flung into and held by the black chair. Oh gosh, thought Will. We thought it would all be simple. The old man, Mr. Cougar, dying, so we bring doctors to save him, so he forgives us, maybe. Maybe the carnival doesn't hurt us, lets us go. But now this, what's next? He's dead. It's too late. Everyone hates us. And Will stood among the others, feeling the cold air waft down from the unearthed mummy, from the cold mouth and cold eyes locked up in frozen eyelids. Inside the frozen nostrils, not a white hair stirred. Mr. Cougar's ribs under his collapsed shirt were stone rigid, and his teeth under his clay lips were dry ice cold. Put him out at noon, and fog would steam off him. The interns glanced at each other. They nodded. The policeman, at this, took one step forward. Gentlemen! Mr. Dark scuttled a tarantula hand up an electric brass switchboard. 100,000 volts will now burn Mr. Electrico's body.
No, don't let him, Will cried.
The policemen took another step. The interns opened their mouths to speak. Mr. Dark flicked a swift, demanding glance at Jim. Jim cried,
No, it's all right. Jim!
Will, yes, it's okay.
Stand back. The spider clutched the switch handle. This man is in a trance. As part of our new act, I have hypnotized him. He could suffer injury if you shocked him from his spell.
The interns shut their mouths. The police stopped moving.
100,000 volts. Yet he will come forth alive, whole in sound mind and body.
No!
A policeman grabbed Will. The illustrated man and all the men and beasts asprawl in frenzies on him now snatched and banged the switch. The tent lights snuffed out. Policemen, interns, boys jumped up their flesh in cobbles and boils. But now, in the swift midnight shuddering, the electric chair was a hearth, and on it the old man blazed like a blue autumn tree. The police flinched back. The interns leaned ahead, as did the freaks, blue fire in their eyes. The illustrated man, hand glued to switch, looked upon the old, old, old man. The old man was flint rock dead, yes, but electricity alive sheathed over him. It swarmed on his cold shell ears. It flickered in his deep as an abandoned stone well nostrils. It crept blue eels of power on his praying mantis fingers and his grasshopper knees. The illustrated man's lips thrust wide. Perhaps he yelled, but no one heard against the immense fry blast, the slam and sizzle of power, which prowled in around, over, under, about man and prisoning chair. Come alive, cried the hum. Come alive, cried the storming color and light. Come alive, yelled Mr. Dark's mouth, which no one heard but Jim, reading lips, red, thunderous loud in his mind, and Will the same. Come alive, willing the old man to live, start up, tick, hum, work juice, summon spit, ungum spirit, melt wax soul.
He's dead!
But no one heard Will either, no matter how he pushed against the lightning clamor. Alive, Mr. Dark's lips licked and savored. Alive, come alive, he ratcheted the switch to the last notch. Live, live. Somewhere dynamos protested, skirled, shrilled, moaned a bestial energy. The light turned bottle green. Dead, dead, thought Will. But live, alive, cried machines, cried flame and fire, cried mouths of crowds of livid beasts on illustrated flesh. So the old man's hair stood up in prickling fumes. Sparks bled from his fingernails, dripped seething spatters upon pine planks. Green simmerings wove shuttles through dead eyelids. The illustrated man bent violently above the old, old, dead, dead thing, his prides of beasts drowned deep in sweat, his right hand thrust in hammering demand upon the air, live, live! And the old man came alive. Will yelled himself hoarse, and no one heard. For now, very slowly, as if aroused by thunder, as if the electric fire were new dawn, one dead eyelid peeled itself slowly open. The freaks gaped.
A long way off in the storm, Jim was yelling too, for Will had his elbow tight and felt the yell pouring out through the bones as the old man's lips fell apart and frightful sizzles zigzagged between lips and threaded teeth. The illustrated man cut the power to a whine. Then, turning, he fell to his knees and put out his hand. Away off up there on the platform, there was the faintest stir as of an autumn leaf beneath the old man's shirt. The freaks exhaled. The old, old man sighed. Yes, Will thought, they're breathing for him, helping him, making him to live. Inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, yet it looked like an act. What could he say or do? Lungs, so, 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 someone whispered. The Dust Witch, back in her glass box. Inhale, the freaks breathed. Exhale, their shoulders slumped. The old, old man's lips trembled. Heartbeat, one, two, so, so. The witch again, Will feared to look. A vein ticked a small watch in the old man's throat. Very slowly now, that right eye of the old man opened full wide, fixed, stared like a broken camera. It was like looking through a hole in space with no bottom forever. He grew warmer. The boys below grew colder. Now the old and terribly wise with nightmare eye was so wide and so deep and so alive all to itself in that smashed porcelain face that there at the bottom of the eye somewhere the evil nephew peered along and out at the freaks, interns, police, and Will. Will saw himself, saw Jim, two little pictures posed in reflection on that single eye. If the old man blinked, the two images would be crushed by his lid. The illustrated man, on his knees, turned at last and gentled all with his smile. Gentlemen, boys, here indeed is the man who lives with lightning. The second policeman laughed. This motion shook his hand off his holster. Will shuffled to the right. The old spittle eye followed, sucking at him with its emptiness. Will squirmed left, as did the phlegm that was the old man's gaze, while his chill lips peeled wide to shape, reshape, an echoed gasp, a flutter. From deep below, the old man bounced his voice, ricocheting off the dank stone walls of his body until it fell out his mouth. Welcome! The word fell back in. Welcome! The policemen nudged each other with identical smiles.
No! Cried Will suddenly. That's no act! He was dead! He'd die again if you cut the power!
Will slapped his own hand to his mouth. Oh, Lord, he thought, what am I doing? I want him alive so he'll forgive us, let us be. But, oh, Lord, even more I want him dead. I want them all dead. They scare me so much I got hairballs big as cats in my stomach. I'm sorry, he whispered.
Don't be, cried Mr. Dark. The freaks made a commotion of blinks and glares. What next from the statue in the cold, sizzling chair? The old, old man's one eye gummed itself. The mouth collapsed, a bubble of yellow mud in a sulfur bath. The illustrated man banged the switch a notch, grinning wildly at no one. He thrust a steel sword in the old man's empty glove-like hand. A drench of electricity prickled from the sear music box tines of the ancient stubbled cheeks. That deep eye showed swift as a bullet hole. Hungry for Will, it found and ate of his image. The lips steamed.
I saw the boys sneak into the tent.
The desiccated bellows refilled, then pin-punctured the swamp air out in faint wails.
We rehearsing, so I thought, play this trick, pretend to be dead.
Again, the pause to drink oxygen like ale, electricity like wine.
Let myself fall, like I was dying. The boys, screaming, ran.
The old man husked out syllable on syllable.
Ha!
Pause.
Ha!
Pause.
Ha!
Electricity hemstitched the whistling lips. The illustrated man coughed gently.
This act, it tires, Mr. Electrico.
Oh, sure. One of the policemen started. Sorry. He touched his cap.
Fine show.
Fine, said one of the interns. Will glanced swiftly to see the intern's mouth. What it looked like saying this. But Jim stood in the way.
Boys, a dozen free passes. Mr. Dark held them out. Here.
Jim and Will didn't move.
Well, said one policeman.
Sheepishly, Will reached up for the flame-colored tickets, but stopped as Mr. Dark said,
Your names?
The officers winked at each other. Tell 'em, boys. Silence. The freaks watched. Simon, said Jim. Simon Smith. Mr. Dark's hand holding the tickets constricted.
Oliver, said Will.
Oliver Brown. The illustrated man sucked in a mighty breath.
The freaks inhaled.
The vast, ingasped sigh might have seemed to stir Mr. Electrico. His sword twitched.
Its tip leaped to spark-sting Will's shoulder, then sizzle over in blue-green explosions at Jim.
Lightning shot Jim's shoulder.
The policeman laughed. The old, old man's one wide eye blazed.
I dub the asses and fools. I dub thee, Mr. Sickly, and Mr. Pale.
Mr. Electrico finished. The sword tapped them.
A short, sad life. For you both.
Then his mouth slit shut, his raw eye glued over. Containing his cellar breath, he let the simple sparks swarm his blood like dark champagne.
The tickets, murmured Mr. Dark. Free rides, free rides. Come any time. Come back. Come back.
Jim grabbed. Will grabbed the tickets. They jumped. They bolted from the tent. The police, smiling and waving all around, followed at their leisure. The interns, not smiling, like ghosts in their white suits, came after. They found the boys huddled in the back of the police car. They looked as though they wanted to go home. Part 2. Pursuits. Chapter 25. She could feel the mirrors waiting for her in each room, much the same as you felt, without opening your eyes, that the first snow of winter has just fallen outside your window. Miss Foley had first noticed, some years ago, that her house was crowded with bright shadows of herself. Best, then, to ignore the cold sheets of December ice in the hall, above the bureaus, in the bath. Best, skate the thin ice, lightly. Paused. The weight of your attention might crack the shell. plunged through the crust, you might drown in depths so cold, so remote, that all the past lay carved in tombstone marbles there. Ice water would syringe your veins. Transfixed at the mirror sill, you would stand forever, unable to lift your gaze from the proofs of time. Yet tonight, with the echo of the running feet of the three boys dying away, she kept feeling snow falling in the mirrors of her house. She wanted to thrust through the frames to test their weather. But she was afraid that doing this might cause all the mirrors to somehow assemble in billion-fold multiplications of self, an army of women marching away to become girls, and girls marching to become infinitely small children. So many people, crammed in one house, would provoke suffocation. So, what must she do about mirrors, Will Holloway, Jim Nightshade, and the nephew? Strange. Why not say my nephew? Because, she thought, from the first when he came in the door, he didn't belong. His proof was not proof. She kept waiting for what? Tonight, the carnival. Music, the nephew said, that must be heard. Rides that must be ridden. Stay away from the maze where winter slept. Swim around with the carousel where summer, sweet as clover, honey grass, and wild mint, kept its lovely time. She looked out at the night lawn from which she had not yet retrieved the scattered jewels. Somehow she guessed this was a way the nephew had of getting rid of the two boys who might stop her using this ticket she took from the mantle. Carousel, admit one. She had waited for the nephew to come back. With time passing, she must act on her own. Something must be done, not to hurt, no, but slow down interference from such as Jim and Will. No one must stand between her and nephew, her and carousel, her and lovely gliding ride around summer. The nephew had said as much by saying nothing, by just holding her hands and breathing baked apple pie scent from his small pink mouth upon her face. She lifted the telephone. Across town, she saw the light in the stone library building, as all the town had seen it over the years. She dialed. A quiet voice answered. She said,
"Library? Mr. Holloway, this is Miss Foley, Will's teacher. In 10 minutes, please, meet me in the police station. Mr. Holloway?"
A pause.
"Are you still there?"
Chapter 26. "I'd have sworn," said one intern, "when we first got there, that old man was dead." The ambulance and the police car had pulled up at the same moment at the crossroads, going back into town. One of the interns had called over. Now one of the policemen called back. "You're joking." The interns sat in their ambulance. They shrugged. "Yeah, sure. Joking." They drove on ahead, their faces as quiet and white as their uniforms. The police followed, with Jim and Will huddled in back, trying to say more, but the police started talking and laughing, retelling everything that happened to one another, so Will and Jim wound up lying, giving wrong names again, saying they lived around the corner from the police station. They let the police drop them at two dark houses near the station, and they ran up on those porches and grabbed the doorknobs and waited for the prowl car to swing off around the corner into the station. And then they came down and followed and stood looking at the yellow lights of the station, all sun-colored at midnight, and Will glanced over and saw the whole evening come and go in Jim's face, and Jim watching the police station windows as if at any moment darkness might fill every room and put the lights out forever. On my way back into town, thought Will, I threw away my tickets. But look, Jim still has his in his hand. Will trembled. What did Jim think, want, plan, now that dead men lived and only lived through the fire of white-hot electric chair machines? Did he still very much love carnivals? Will searched. Faint echoes. Yes, they came, they went in Jim's eyes, for Jim, after all, was Jim, even standing here with the calm light of justice falling on his cheekbones. The chief of police, Will said, he'd listen to us.
Yeah, said Jim. He'd wake just long enough to send for the butterfly net. Hell, William, hell, even I don't believe what's happened the last 24 hours.
But we gotta find someone higher up. Keep trying. Now we know what the score is.
Okay, what's the score? What's the carnival done is so bad? Scared a woman with a mirror maze? So she scared herself, the police'd say. Burgled a house? Okay, where's the burglar? Hiding inside an old man's skin? Who'd believe that? Who'd believe an old man was ever a boy 12? What else is the score? Did a lightning rod salesman disappear? Sure, and left his bag. But he could have left town.
That dwarf in the sideshow.
I saw him, you saw him. Looks kind of like the lightning rod man, sure. But again, can you prove he was ever big?
No. Just like you can't prove Cougar was ever small. So that leaves us right here, Will. On this sidewalk. No proof except what we saw, and us just kids.
The carnival's word against ours, and the police had a fine time anyway there.
Oh, gosh, it's a mess.
If only there was still some way to If only there was still some way to apologize to Mr. Cougar.
Apologize? Will yelled. To a man-eating crocodile? Jehoshaphat, you still don't see we can't do business with those Ulmers and Goffs?
Ulmers? Goffs?
Jim gazed upon him thoughtfully, for that was how the boys talked of the creatures who dragged and swayed and slumped through their dreams. In the bad dreams of William, the Ulmers moaned and gibbered and had no faces. In the equally bad dreams of Jim, the Goffs, his peculiar name for them, grew like monster meringue-paste mushrooms, which fed on rats, which fed on spiders, which fed, in turn, because they were large enough, on cats.
Ulmers, Goffs, said Will. You need a 10-ton safe to fall on you? Look what happened to two folks already, Mr. Electrico and that terrible crazy dwarf. All kinds of things can go wrong with people on that darn machine. We know, we seen it. Maybe they squashed the lightning rod man down that way on purpose, or maybe something went wrong. Fact is, he wound up in a wine press anyway, got run over by a steamroller carousel, and's so crazy now he doesn't even know us. Ain't that enough to scare the Jesus out of you, Jim? Why, maybe even Mr. Crosetti. Mr. Crosetti's on vacation.
Maybe yes, maybe no. There's his shop. There's the sign, closed on account of illness.
What kind of illness, Jim? He eat too much candy out at the show? He gets seasick on everybody's favorite ride?
Cut it, Will.
No, sir, I won't cut it.
Sure, sure, the merry-go-round sounds keen. You think I like being 13 all the time? Not me.
But for cry-yi, Jim, face it. You don't really want to be 20.
What else we talked about all summer?
Talk, sure.
But throwing yourself headfirst in that taffy machine and getting your bones pulled long, Jim, you wouldn't know what to do with your bones then.
I'd know, said Jim in the night.
I'd know.
Sure.
You'd just go away and leave me here, Jim.
Why, protested the other, I wouldn't leave you, Will. We'd be together.
Together?
You 2 feet taller and going around feeling your leg and arm bones? You looking down at me, Jim? And what did we talk about? Me with my pockets full of kite string and marbles and frog eyes
and you with clean, nice, and empty pockets and making fun. Is that what we talk? And you able to run faster and ditch me? I'd never ditch you, Will. Ditch me in a minute. Well, go on, Jim. Just go on, leave me, because I got my pocket knife, and there's nothing wrong with me sitting under a tree playing mumbledy-peg while you get yourself plain crazy with the heat of all those horses racing around. But thank God they're not racing anymore. And it's your fault, cried Jim. He stopped. Will stiffened and made fists. You mean I should have let young, mean, and terrible get old, mean, and terrible enough to chew our heads off? Just let him ride around and hawk his spit in our eye? And maybe you with him? Waving goodbye, going around again, waving so long, and all I got to do is wave back, Jim, that what you mean? Shh, said Jim. Like you say, it's too late. The carousel's broke. And when it's fixed, they ride old horrible cougar back, make him young enough so he can speak and remember our names. And then they come like cannibals after us, or just me, if you want to get in good with them and go tell them my name and where I live. I wouldn't do that, Will. Jim touched him. Oh, Jim, Jim, you do see, don't you? Everything in its time, like the preacher said only last month. Everything one by one, not two by two. Will you remember? Everything, said Jim, in its time. And then they heard voices from the police station. In one of the rooms to the right of the entrance, a woman was talking now, and men were talking. Will nodded to Jim, and they ran quietly over to pick their way through bushes and look into the room. There sat Miss Foley. There sat Will's father.
I don't understand, said Miss Foley. To think Will and Jim would break in my house, steal, run off?
You saw their faces? Asked Mr. Holloway.
When I screamed, they looked back under the light.
She's not mentioning the nephew, thought Will. And she won't, of course. You see, Jim, he wanted to shout. It was a trap. The nephew waited for us to come prowling. He wanted to get us in so much trouble, no matter what we said to anybody, police, parents, that nobody'd listen to us about carnivals, late hours, merry-go-rounds, because our word'd be no good.
I don't want to prosecute, said Miss Foley, but if they are innocent, where are the boys?
Here, someone cried.
Will,
said Jim. Too late. For Will had jumped high and was scrambling through the window. Here, he said simply as he touched the floor. Chapter 27 They walked home quietly on the moon-colored sidewalks, Mr. Holloway between the boys. When they reached home, Will's father sighed. Jim, I don't see any reason to tear your mother to bits at this hour. If you promise to tell her this whole thing at breakfast, I'll let you off. Can you get in without waking her up?
Sure.
Look what we got.
We?
Jim nodded, and took them over to fumble among the clusters of thick moss and leaves on the side of the house until they found the iron rungs they had secretly nailed and placed to make a hidden ladder up to Jim's room. Mr. Holloway laughed, once almost with pain, and a strange wild sadness shook his head.
How long has this gone on? No, don't tell. I did it too at your age.
He looked up the ivy toward Jim's window. Fun being out late, free as all hell, he caught himself. You don't stay out too long.
This week was the very first time after midnight.
Dad pondered a moment. Having permission would spoil everything, I suppose. It's sneaking out to the lake, the graveyard, the rail tracks, the peach orchard, summer nights that counts.
Gosh, Mr. Holloway, did you once?
Yes, but don't let the women know I told you. Up, he motioned, and don't come out again any night for the next month.
Yes, sir.
Jim swung monkey-wise to the stars, flashed through his window, shut it, drew the shade. Dad looked up at the hidden rungs coming down out of the starlight to the running free world of sidewalks that invited the 1,000-yard dash and the high hurdles of the dark bushes and the pole vault cemetery trellises and walls. You know what I hate most of all, Will? Not being able to run anymore, like you.
Yes, sir, said his son.
Let's have it clear now, said Dad. Tomorrow, go apologize to Miss Foley again. Check her lawn. We may have missed some of the stolen property with matches and flashlights. Then go to the police chief to report. You're lucky you turned yourself in. You're lucky Miss Foley won't press charges.
Yes, sir.
They walked back to the side of their own house. Dad raked his hand in the ivy. Our place, too? His hand found a rung Will had nailed away among the leaves.
Our place, too.
He took out his tobacco pouch, filled his pipe as they stood by the ivy, the hidden rungs leading up to warm beds, safe rooms, then lit his pipe and said, I know you. You're not acting guilty. You didn't steal anything.
No.
Then why did you say you did to the police?
Because Miss Foley, who knows why, wants us guilty. If she says we are, we are. You saw how surprised she was to see us come in through the window. She never figured we'd confess. Well, we did. We got enough enemies without the law on us, too. I figured if we made a clean breast, they'd go easy. They did. At the same time, boy, Miss Foley's one too, because now we're criminals. Nobody'll believe what we say.
I'll believe.
Will you?
Will searched the shadows on his father's face, saw whiteness of skin, eyeball, and hair.
Dad, the other night, at 3 o'clock in the morning...
3 in the morning... He saw Dad flinch as from a cold wind, as if he smelled and knew the whole thing and simply could not move, reach out, touch, and pat Will. And he knew he could not say it. Tomorrow, yes, some other day, yes, or perhaps with the sun coming up, the tents would be gone. The freaks off over the world, leaving them alone. Knowing they were scared enough not to push it, say anything, just to keep their mouths shut. Maybe it would all blow over, maybe. Maybe. Yes, Will, said his father with difficulty, the pipe in his hand going dead. Go on.
No, thought Will. Let Jim and me be cannibalized, but no one else. Anyone that knows gets hurt, so no one else must know.
Aloud he said,
In a couple days, Dad, I'll tell you everything. I swear. Mom's honor.
Mom's honor, said Dad at last, is good enough for me. Chapter 28 The night was sweet with the dust of autumn leaves that smelled as if the fine sands of ancient Egypt were drifting to dunes beyond the town. How come, thought Will, at a time like this, I can even think of 4,000 years of dust of ancient people sliding around the world, and me sad because no one notices except me and Dad here, maybe, and even us not telling each other.
It was indeed a time between.
One second their thoughts all brambled Airedale, the next all silken slumbering cat. It was a time to go to bed. Yet still they lingered, reluctant as boys to give over and wander in wide circles to pillow and night thoughts. It was a time to say much, but not all. It was a time after first discoveries, but not last ones. It was wanting to know everything and wanting to know nothing. It was the new sweetness of men starting to talk as they must talk. It was the possible bitterness of revelation. So while they should have gone upstairs, They could not depart this moment that promised others on not-so-distant nights, when man and boy becoming man might almost sing. So Will at last said carefully,
Dad, am I a good person?
I think so. I know so, yes.
Will that help when things get really rough?
It'll help.
Will it save me if I need saving? I mean, if I'm around bad people and there's no one else good around for miles, what then?
It'll help.
That's not good enough, Dad.
Good is no guarantee for your body. It's mainly for peace of mind.
But sometimes, Dad, aren't you so scared that even...
The mind isn't peaceful? His father nodded, his face uneasy.
Dad,
said Will, his voice very faint.
Are you a good person?
To you and your mother, yes, I try. But no man's a hero to himself. I've lived with me a lifetime, Will. I know everything worth knowing about myself.
And adding it all up?
The sum? As they come and go, and I mostly sit very still and tight, yes, I'm all right.
Then, Dad,
asked Will,
why aren't you happy?
The front lawn at, let's see, 1:30 in the morning is no place to start a philosophical...
I just wanted to know, is all.
There was a long moment of silence. Dad sighed. Dad took his arm, walked him over, and sat him down on the porch steps, relit his pipe. Puffing, he said, All right. Your mother's asleep. She doesn't know we're out here with our tomcat talk. We can go on. Now, look, since when did you think being good meant being happy?
Since always.
Since now, learn otherwise. Sometimes the man who looks the happiest in town, with the biggest smile, is the one carrying the biggest load of sin. There are smiles and smiles. Learn to tell the dark variety from the light. The seal barker, the laugh shouter, half the time he's covering up. He's had his fun and he's guilty. And men do love sin. Will, oh, how they love it, never doubt, in all shapes, sizes, colors, and smells. Times come when troughs, not tables, suit our appetites. Hear a man too loudly praising others and look to wonder if he didn't just get up from the sty. On the other hand, that unhappy, pale, put-upon man walking by who looks all guilt and sin, why... Often that's your good man with a capital G, Will. For being good is a fearful occupation. Men strain at it and sometimes break in two. I've known a few. You work twice as hard to be a farmer as to be his hog. I suppose it's thinking about trying to be good makes the crack run up the wall one night. A man with high standards, too, the least hair falls on him, sometimes wilts his spine. He can't let himself alone, won't lift himself off the hook if he falls just a breath from grace. Oh, it would be lovely if you could just be fine, act fine, not think of it all the time. But it's hard, right? With the last piece of lemon cake waiting in the icebox, middle of the night, not yours, but you lie awake in a hot sweat for it, eh? Do I need to tell you? Or a hot spring day, noon. And there you are, chained to your school desk, and away off there goes the river, cool and fresh over the rockfall. Boys can hear clear water like that miles away. So, minute by minute, hour by hour, a lifetime. It never ends, never stops. You got the choice this second, now this next, and the next after that. Be good, be bad. That's what the clock ticks. That's what it says in the ticks. Run, swim, or stay hot.
run, eat, or lie hungry. So you stay. But once stayed, Will, you know the secret, don't you? Don't think of the river again, or the cake, because if you do, you'll go crazy. Add up all the rivers never swum in, cakes never eaten, and by the time you get my age, Will, it's a lot missed out on. But then you console yourself, thinking, the more times in, the more times possibly drowned or choked on lemon frosting. But then, through plain dumb cowardice, I guess, maybe you hold off from too much. Wait. Play it safe. Look at me. Married at 39, Will. 39. But I was so busy wrestling myself, 2 falls out of 3, I figured I couldn't marry until I had licked myself good and forever. Too late, I found you can't wait to become perfect. You got to go out and fall down and get up with everybody else. So at last, I looked up from my great self-wrestling match one night when your mother came to the library for a book and got me instead. And I saw then and there you take a man half bad and a woman half bad and put their 2 good halves together, and you got 1 human all good to share between. That's you, Will, for my money. And the strange thing is, son, and sad too, though you're always racing out there on the rim of the lawn and me on the roof using books for shingles, comparing life to libraries, I soon saw you were wiser, sooner and better, than I will ever be. Dad's pipe was dead. He paused to tap it out and reload it. No, sir, Will said. Yes, said his father. I'd be a fool not to know I'm a fool. My one wisdom is you're wise. Funny, Will said after a long pause. You've told me more tonight than I've told you. I'll think some more. Maybe I'll tell you everything at breakfast, okay? I'll be ready if you are. Because I want you to be happy, Dad. He hated the tears that sprang to his eyes. I'll be all right, Will. Anything I could say or do to make you happy, I would. Willie, William. Dad lit his pipe again and watched the smoke blow away in sweet dissolvings. Just tell me I'll live forever. That would do nicely. His voice, Will thought. I never noticed. It's the same color as his hair. Pa, he said, don't sound so sad.
Me? I'm the original sad man. I read a book and it makes me sad. See a film, sad. Plays, they really work me over.
Is there anything, said Will, doesn't make you sad?
One thing. Death.
Boy, Will started. I should think that would.
No, said the man with the voice to match his hair. Death makes everything else sad. But death itself only scares. If there wasn't death, all the other things wouldn't get tainted. And, Will thought, here comes the carnival. Death like a rattle in one hand, life like a candy in the other. Shake one to scare you, offer one to make your mouth water. Here comes the sideshow, both hands full. He jumped to his feet.
Dad, oh, listen! You'll live forever. Believe me or you're sunk. Sure, you were sick a few years ago, but that's over. Sure, you're 54, but that's young. And another thing.
Yes, Willie? His father waited for him. He swayed. He bit his lips, then blurted out.
Don't go near the carnival.
Strange, his father said. That's what I was going to tell you.
I wouldn't go back to that place for $1 billion.
But, Will thought, that won't stop the carnival searching through town to visit me.
Promise, Dad?
Why don't you want me to go there, Will?
That's one of the things I'll tell tomorrow, or next week, or next year. You just got to trust me, Dad.
I do, son. Dad took his hand. It's a promise. As if at a signal, both turned to the house. The time was up. The hour was late. Enough had been said. They properly sensed they must go. The way you came out, said Dad, is the way you go in. Will walked silently to touch the iron rungs hidden under the rustling ivy.
Dad, you won't pull these off?
Dad probed one with his fingers. Someday, when you're tired of them, you'll take them off yourself.
I'll never be tired of them.
Is that how it seems? Yes, to someone at your age, you figure you'll never get tired of anything. All right, son, up you go. He saw how his father looked up along the ivy and the hidden path.
You want to come up this way, too?
No, no, his father said quickly.
Because, said Will, you're welcome.
That's all right. Go on. But still he looked at the ivy stirring in the dark morning light. Will sprang up, grabbed the first, the second, the third rungs, and looked down. From just this distance, Dad looked as if he were shrinking there on the ground. Somehow he didn't want to leave him behind, there in the night, like someone ditched by someone else, one hand up to move, but not moving.
Dad,
he whispered,
you ain't got the stuff.